The hour of 10 o'clock having arrived, I'd like to call the Illinois Health Benefits Exchange Legislative Study Committee hearing to order. I'm glad to see that we have all caucuses represented at this point, and I'd like to ask the clerk to go ahead and take roll.
Senator Brady?
Here.
Representative Davis? Senator Hain? Representative Harris?
Here.
Senator Jones? Representative Martino? Senator Noland?
Here.
Representative Osmond?
Here.
Representative Sasha?
Here.
Representative Sanger?
Here.
Senator Steens?
Here.
And Senator Steverson.
Eight members answering the roll. A quorum is present. I also want to thank all those who joined with us today, and we also have members who are not on the commission or study group who have joined to get themselves better informed and updated on the status of insurance exchanges and where the state of Illinois is currently and where we expect to be in the next year. Joining with us today, we have Michael Gelder, who is the been the lead from the governor's office and senior policy advisor on healthcare, and has had the responsibility of some of the implementation and development of the program. I also like to welcome Senator Hain. And we've asked Mr. Gelder to join with us to bring us up to speed on what is going on with the exchanges, what we have done as far as making application to the federal government. And he has a presentation, which I think all members should have, to go through. And I would ask that we let him go completely through the presentation, and then we'll go to questions. Joining with him is Colleen Burns. Colleen, welcome. And Mr. Gelder, welcome. The floor is yours.
Well, thank you very much, and good morning to all of you. And thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and members of the study group. Is this the study group? Study committee, for your continued interest and desire to be as informed as possible about, is this, the light is on. I just didn't have it close enough. All right. I was just saying that I want to thank all of you for your continued interest and attention to this very important function of government, helping to assure access to affordable health insurance. And I thought I'd prepare a presentation. I'll go through it. If there are some technical questions along the way, not so much issues, we'll be happy to answer questions as best we can at the conclusion. But I just wanted to respond to the request, which was a update on what we've been doing with the Affordable Care Act in general, the health insurance exchange in particular, and I thought it'd be helpful to provide a little bit of context without taking up too much of your time this morning, because the exchange fits into a broader array of changes instituted through the Affordable Care Act. So Governor Quinn initially was very supportive of the Affordable Care Act. He established the Health Care Reform Implementation Council in July of 2010, just a couple months after the federal legislation was passed at the end of March. The key things that we've done is the declaration letter to the federal government stating Illinois' intent to establish an exchange, but to participate in a state-federal partnership the first year, and that first year begins technically on January 1st, 2014, but the exchange will be up and running for people to shop on it as of October of 2013, just 11 months from now. And he's also expressed his support of increasing access to health care for low-income individuals who have been previously uninsured. The Healthcare Reform Implementation Council, comprised of members of the cabinet who have a significant role to play in the insurance and access to care, quality care, payment for care issues, made several recommendations. We submitted to him in 2011. They were to establish a state-based exchange as a quasi-governmental entity with the potential for an active purchaser role. We would engage employers, consumers, and insurers to develop an aggressive and culturally sensitive outreach plan, because we know that just having things in place does not work for the variety of ethnic and racial communities throughout Illinois. We needed to make sure that the employers and consumers and insurers all work together. We wanted to have an aggressive implementation of the health information exchange. That's the information exchange that allows doctors and providers, hospitals, clinics, to exchange electronic health record information with each other, despite whatever systems they might have and at limitations of those systems in communicating with other providers, a very important part of the overall implementation of the Affordable Care Act. The council also in September recommended a set of essential health benefits and a benefit plan. We'll talk about that in more detail. And we've also issued recommendations on workforce development, improving quality of care, and we've had hearings on the navigators and the importance of the outreach program that we need to undertake to be successful with providing high-quality care to Illinois' currently uninsured populations. So far in Illinois, we've received over just about $200 million for the implementation of the Affordable Care Act. The state has been very aggressive in seeking federal funding, and so have the provider communities. Some of this money, $200 million, goes for the community development of community health centers, which are also called federally qualified health centers, a very important part of the delivery mechanism that needs to be in place. There's also been money granted to Illinois for workforce development, as well as training and enhanced prevention services. These are all very important parts of getting health care to people, because we know that just giving people a new insurance card isn't by itself going to be sufficient unless there's providers located throughout the state who can provide the primary and preventive services that are necessary. And we also know that as a nation we can't afford to treat people once they're sick, because that's a much more costly approach than trying to help them stay healthy in the first place. And that's why we've been very active. The Department of Public Health received a $25 million grant from the federal government as part of the ACA called the Community Transformation Grant. And we have our state program called We Choose Health, which is emphasizing tobacco-free living, active living, and healthy eating, focusing on quality clinical and other preventive services, social and emotional wellness, and fostering a safe and healthy physical environment, because these are all major influences that impact people's health status. And we're providing those $25 million in grant funds to local organizations, health providers, schools, and businesses outside of Cook, Kane, DuPage, Lake, and Will counties, so pretty much statewide except for the major metropolitan area. I thought it's important just to remind us of the things that the Affordable Care Act has accomplished so far. It assures coverage to Americans with pre-existing conditions. Children will be covered, children covered so far, adults as of 2014. It protects your choice of doctors. It keeps young adults covered under age 26. There are thousands of people in Illinois now covered under their parents' health plan. It eliminates lifetime limits on coverage. There will be banned for all new health insurance plans. It ends pre-existing condition exclusions for children. It ends arbitrary withdrawals or the cancellation of your health insurance just because of a simple mistake in the application process. That will no longer be allowed. It allows the insurance departments to review premium increases, an effort that's underway now in Illinois. It helps get the most of your premium dollars, meaning that there's the 80% limit on what on the requirement that insurers spend at least 80% of your health dollar on of your premium dollar on health care costs. removing insurance companies, the barriers on access to emergency services. It covers preventive care at no out-of-pocket copayment costs, and guarantees a right of appeal, which has been something that has been plagued consumers for a long time throughout the country. So turning more to the exchange itself, what is the exchange? Well, the exchange is a mechanism to make it easier for consumers to purchase private health insurance. It allows consumers to compare health insurance plans on an apples-to-apples basis and simplifies the process of enrolling and managing your insurance. And small businesses can offer insurance to their employees through a streamlined, easy-to-use web portal. It's designed to help consumers and employers manage their health insurance, meaning that you can go back to the exchange to add a dependent, to make changes to your coverage options that might be available to you now only through a third party. The exchange is going to be the central web-based portal for handling matters that will simplify tremendously the effort needed to identify what insurance plan is best for you, find something that is affordable, that offers the coverage that you want, and then to make the decision about which of the various plans that meet those criteria offers you the best value. And the exchange is the exchange is the place. It could be web accessed, it could be accessed through a call center, but many people think of it as an electronic marketplace with a lot of other potential functions down the road. So the progress we've made to date is the Department of Insurance has used the federal funding to prepare Illinois to operate a health insurance exchange. We've used the federal funding to assess the marketplace, estimate the cost of an exchange, engage health providers, insurers, consumer advocates, and the business community to understand exchange-related issues. And there have been a series of reports that consultants have prepared, and they are available on our website. A lot of this information was made available to this study group a year and a half ago as you were studying the exchange issues. There have been new reports the old reports that you've looked at and the new reports are all available on the state's websites. And the last page, I think, points you to those. The state has awarded a contract to design and implement an integrated eligibility system as another element of progress towards the exchange. This is because the exchange is going to be the mechanism for determining, for learning what financial support is going to be available to you, and that will combine both eligibility for the eligibility information for people who will be eligible for Medicaid covered costs, as well as those who would be eligible for premium subsidies. And so we knew we needed a integrated eligibility system so that it would be possible for the public to go to one site, and then the back office functions would determine what based on their income and their family size to determine what which of the premium supports would be available to them, either through the state Medicaid program or through the federal subsidy. That's part of the Affordable Care Act. And then in July, we issued a request for proposal to solicit a vendor to actually build the technical infrastructure for Illinois' state-based exchange. And we are completing that procurement process very shortly, we'll have to decide what we do next with that. The exchange funding has that I talked about before, we've received $1 million planning grant for the exchange back 2 years ago, September 30th of 2010. In the fall of 2011, a year ago, we received a $5 million, additional $5 million, what they call Level 1 Establishment Grant, the funding base for the states could establish their exchanges. And on May 16th of this spring, we received the second level establishment grant for $32 million, and that's what we've used that's what the RFP the contract would be funded by for the development of the state-based exchange. And we expect overall to receive more than $125 million in federal funding to support the integrated eligibility system. One of the major differences in health insurance in the United States post-2014compared to the current system brought about through the Affordable Care Act is a concept called essential health benefits, that the federal government requires all policies sold on the exchange as well as off the exchange to have a basic benefit structure. And those 10 items that are required are found on the next slide, on slide 11. They're ambulatory services, emergency services, hospitalization, maternity and newborn care, mental health and substance abuse disorders, prescription drugs, rehabilitative and habilitative services, laboratory services, preventive and wellness services, chronic disease management, and pediatric services, including oral and vision care. So this is a very new concept, a very important concept, one that protects consumers, so that now if you have insurance purchased on or off the exchange, your insurance is going to be required to cover those essential health benefits. To do that, there were requirements imposed on states that were going to select their essential health benefits. We had to choose from one of the largest small group plans already in effect in Illinois, or a state employee plan or a federal employee plan. We are moving to slide 12, recommended that the that we recommended that Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois Blue Advantage small group plan be the base for our essential health benefits, since it covered all but two of those requirements, and then we supplement the Blue Cross Blue Shield Blue Advantage with pediatric vision benefits that are covered under the federal Blue Vision program, and the pediatric dental services that would be matched by that would be the same as the all kids dental services. So throughout this, the selection of the essential health benefits, we're trying to, and the Affordable Care Act requires states to build on existing insurance plans that are being sold. So we couldn't just come up with our own baseline. We had to use one, and we chose one of the most popular ones in the state, as the baseline that all the other insurance policies sold now under the exchange in 2014 or off the exchange will have to meet. I mentioned going back to the beginning that we had submitted our letter of intent to the federal government to operate as a partnership exchange. This partnership is available to states for the first year, states that were going to build the bridge towards a state-based exchange but were not ready yet to operate their own state-based exchange. That describes Illinois, and that's the route we're planning to take. So it's a bridge to a state-based exchange. By being a partnership, unlike a federal exchange, if states allow the federal government to run the exchange, all of the plan management and consumer assistance functions fall under the control of the federal government. As a state planning to implement a state-based exchange through the partnership model, this allows us, Illinois, to take the lead in plan management and in-person consumer assistance, and recognizing that certain exchange functions, the exchange itself, the development, the actual web-based program that I described earlier, will be run by the federal government during the first year while the state is in this partnership model. The map on slide 14 sort of shows the most recent information available, what states are in what category. Illinois is in the purple there with four other states looking seriously at a partnership model. The yellow states reflect those that have rejected a state-run exchange and will be having a federal exchange. And the 18 states in blue are those states that have declared their intent to establish a state-based exchange. Lastly, I'll talk. Spend a minute or two talking about access to care, because we know that we have a crisis of large numbers of people being uninsured. The Affordable Care Act increases access overall, as I said at the beginning, through two mechanisms. The consumers whose incomes are under 133 1/3% of federal poverty level, who have not been eligible for Medicaid because they haven't met the categorical requirements, meaning that they would have to have dependent children or be aged, blind, or disabled on a total and permanent basis. Those people, just because they're poor, would not have been eligible for Medicaid. Now they will be under the Affordable Care Act, with 100% of the cost being borne by the federal government through 2016, with that amount diminishing over time until 2020 to 90% federal funding. So there's a lot of federal support for adding these individuals. And then the other category of people who will be eligible for premium support are individuals and families with incomes between 133 and 400% of the federal poverty level, where they'll have a graduated subsidy that diminishes as their income increases. The delivery system I've talked about a minute ago as well, I just want to say another word about that we have been very conscious of the fact that our fee-for-service program under Medicaid, and that many of the, even in the private sector, that we've not done as good a job as we could in helping to organize more efficient delivery systems, integrated programs where you have primary care and secondary care and tertiary care, along with preventive efforts, all oriented towards the health of the individual. And so under our Medicaid program, we've been stressing the coordination of care. We've also been working with the on the issue of workforce development, because we know we don't have enough doctors practicing primary care. We don't have enough nurses in the right specialties either, and we need to make sure there are adequate numbers of community health workers who are also providing a variety of functions to make sure that our system works as efficiently and effectively as possible. And we've applied for federal funding, and hopefully we'll know in the next couple of days about an opportunity through the Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services Innovations Division that came about as a result of the Affordable Care Act, because we know that Medicaid and Medicare have to work together in ways that they've never done in the 40-year history of the two federal programs. So lastly, the next steps for Illinois are we submitted our partnership blueprint on November 16th, describing some of the technical features of how the State Department of Insurance will operate under the partnership arrangement while the federal government will be operating the exchange itself, describing primarily the plan management activities of the department. We still must pass the establishing legislation for the exchange and Medicaid expansion. We need to implement plan management and consumer assistance functions. Those are functions that the state retains control over as a partnership state. We need to monitor the essential health benefit process. The plan that we identified and recommended to the secretary is, under the federal law, the secretary's to actually formally designate, so we are awaiting that process. The federal government is reviewing all of the states' designations to make sure they meet those 10 criteria and other requirements that were contained in the Affordable Care Act, and we're anticipating their approval shortly. We have to continue preparing for the state-based exchange, because that takes more than a year to develop. And we need to plan for the new individuals who may be eligible for Medicaid, how we're going to care for them through coordinated integrated delivery systems, and work on an overall basis to improve the quality of care throughout the state assuring that Illinois citizens are receive the best care in the most efficient manner and the highest quality care that we can, and there's an important role for the state to play in overseeing that important function as well. So I hope that gave you the overview that of activities that we've been undertaking since we started, going back to 2010, and a lot of activities since this study group has last attended to this. And Colleen Burns from the Department of Insurance, who heads up the effort to develop the state's insurance exchange, is here. I don't know, did you have anything else you want to add or just answer questions? So we'll turn it over to you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Gelder, thank you for coming in and giving us the information to bring us up to speed. As a little bit of housekeeping here, I wanted to add to the role, Representative Monique Davis is joined with us. Senator David Severson has joined with us. We have a full complement of members of the commission and also have been joined by other members of the legislature who've taken a great interest in this as well. What I'd like to do now is go to questions, and I will start with the co-chairman, Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Gelder, for being here. I have some questions, and you may recall that I wrote a letter to the governor on September 24th asking to understand the money that has been received from the federal government and how it is being expended as to setting up the insurance exchange, because I feel it's very important to make sure that the money is being used in the right direction. When you prepared this, you state Illinois has received more than $200 million for the exchange implementation, and that is on your third page of your exhibit. And yet, down here under exchange funding,
yeah,
those numbers don't add up.
Right. Let me clarify. What I perhaps didn't write in a very accurate way. Illinois has received, not meaning the state, but the state and various provider groups in Illinois have received that total of $200 million. We keep a little thermometer on our healthcare reform implementation website, and it, as we get reports from the federal government of awards to providers in Illinois, we keep adding to that total, and that's how it bumps up to $200 million. But the state money is what I said in later in the report. The money actually given to the state of Illinois is the money that has gone to the Department of Insurance, and Colleen can talk more specifically about that, and the money that's gone to the Department of Public Health for the prevention grant program.
But as a legislator sitting up here worried about how we're going to pay bills, sometimes this type of description is very confusing.
Sure. No, I apologize. I see your point, and we should change that wording so it doesn't look like that money's gone to the state of Illinois.
So how much would you say roughly today, I won't hold you to the penny, that the state of Illinois, not any, just the state of Illinois has received for the implementation of an exchange?
We've received around $38 million to date.
Okay, and that's about the same amount that you had told me, the governor had told me in a response to my letter in September.
Right.
That's why I am very concerned that these are saying $200 million and we've only received $38 million.
No, that's a very good point. I apologize for being unclear about that. The total includes all of the other Affordable Care Act appropriation money that's gone to various provider groups for those other functions, and with just the $38 million, as Colleen said, for the implementation of the exchange itself.
All right, thank you.
Further questions? Representative Sasha.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Mr. Gelder, and Colleen, may I call you Colleen?
Yes, of course.
Thank you both for being here in your presentation. the question that Representative Osmond asked, I would like to extend it a little bit and then ask a second part, if I may. I think it was slide 10 or 9 that you referred to, that we had received $1 million, then $5 million, then $32 million, and will receive, I think the figure was $125 million without going back. Who makes that determination? I mean, and how is that money spent? I just get a sense that someone on high decided that these are the numbers that Illinois will receive. Is it similar to what other states receive? And if I can go right into the second part of my question, is Illinois is one of 5 or 7 partnerships, as I understand. Will the ultimate decision maker always not be the federal government? Or will the state be a major player in the decisions as a partnership with the federal government? Is that clear, or am I confusing?
That's clear. Now, okay. To the latter part of your question, the federal government will be running the partnership exchange. So when we say that we're going to partner with the federal government, we should be clear that our exchange in the first year, in 2014, will be a federal exchange. Now, the Department of Insurance and the state of Illinois will be able to work with the federal government on 2 very specific areas, one being the plans that are sold on the exchange, and the second being the consumer assistance functions. However, the federal government retains oversight of both of those functions. As to the funding, it's a federal grant program, and so for the first $1 million that we received, that was the maximum that we were eligible for a planning grant, meaning we applied for the $1 million to be able to look at the Illinois insurance market and determine what steps we needed to take in order to become a state-based exchange. The second grant was just over $5 million, and that was to begin the establishment process, how the exchange would be built. The third grant, which is a second level one establishment grant, was close to $32 million, and that was to get us to the next step, meaning we would like to bring on a vendor to build the IT infrastructure necessary to be a state-based exchange, and the large majority of that grant funding is to go to that vendor.
If I may, in state government or in federal government, these monies are pittances. But to the average citizen, $32 million, $125 million, you know, that's a lottery many times over. And the question I have is still, and again, I'd be the first to confess, I don't understand how it's all being put together, but who makes the determination? Let's use the number $32 million. How does that go to your agency, and then did you say, based on A, B, C, and D, we need $32 million? Or did the federal government say, we'll give you $32 million, do what you can with it?
No, it's the former. So the Department of Insurance applied for the grant saying, we believe that in order to bring a vendor on board to build the IT infrastructure necessary to be a state-based exchange, we believe $32 million is necessary to pay for the IT vendor and the necessary staff to do that.
Thank you.
And there's a lot of documentation. I mean, and when we submit these proposals to the federal government, we document where the money is going to be spent, and they're typically, you know, very careful about, you know, making sure that the state in this case is going to be able to do what it says it's going to do for the price that we're asking for.
Further questions, Representative Harris.
Thank you. So, Ms. Burns, I think this probably should go to you or Michael, whoever wants to chime in. So we as a legislature in the next year will have to make a decision going forward. Do we want to establish a state-based exchange and give some authority for a funding mechanism for the operation of it? Or if we don't do that in the next year-ish, then we lose that right, and you know, our exchange will be run forevermore by the federal government. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Should we get to the place where we decide to default to the federal government, will there be any ongoing expenses for state staff or programming or other infrastructure that we will have to continue to bear, or will the federal government bear all those expenses from that decision point forward?
That's right. The federal government, if the federal government were to run a full federal exchange in Illinois, the cost would be borne by the federal government.
And would then they use the infrastructure that we have built with the $30-plus million that Representative Sasha asked about, or would that essentially be money that was spent on something that would then not be used?
That's right. The federal government is building a federal exchange for all of the states that will be federal exchanges, meaning they are building one exchange IT infrastructure that will be used in all 18-plus states.
And would, if we go to the federal exchange, then does the legislature of the state of Illinois have any authority on, you know, any part of plan design or development or any implementation? It would all become a federal decision at that point.
That's right. Other than the traditional role that the Department of Insurance plays from a regulatory perspective, that's right.
Okay, thank you.
Further questions? Senator Brady.
You've received about $200 million. The state's received about $200 million, but only spent 32 toward, or only 32 of it goes toward the exchange creation.
Yes, the other money has been given to providers.
And is it all grant money?
The $38 million that the Department of Insurance has received is all federal grant dollars.
Is any of it subject to appropriation?
The Affordable Care Act says that it's, the actual language in the Affordable Care Act is such funds as necessary.
But is it subject to appropriation within the state of Illinois?
Oh,
otherwise,
I'm sorry.
Do we have to authorize, and have we authorized any of that to be spent?
No, on the grant funding, but to the
no,
running.
What do you mean no?
The answer to your question on whether or not appropriations that to the federal grant funding is no, meaning it's not subject to appropriation. However, in order to run the exchange, yes, we need authority from the General Assembly to be able to run a state-based exchange because we need the financing and the governance structure in order to do that.
So all the money you've received did not require any action on the part of the legislature.
That's right.
To spend the money.
That's right.
It's just direct pass-through. If, just to back to Representative Harris's, if we never implement a state exchange, the money spent on developing the state exchange is wasted?
The Department of Insurance has not yet spent the $32 million, the most recent grant that we have received. However, the $1 million planning grant has been spent for background research, and the $5 million plus, it was around $5.5 million, that money has been spent, but the most recent grant dollar, grant award, has not yet been spent.
And that's because an FOP. Bids are out?
That's right.
Can you tell us anything about the progress of those bids?
What I can say is that we received 5 bids. We are currently in the process of finishing up the scoring in order to award the bids, but we expect that it'll likely be sometime around the end of, or the beginning of next year.
In this process, there are essentially maybe 3 options.
For an exchange?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you done any calculations on what the different out-year costs are based on the 3 options to the people of Illinois?
As to costs to the state, if we are a full federal exchange, there are no costs to the state of Illinois other than our what DOI currently, our traditional role in being a regulator, is. It's the same for the partnership exchange. The federal government does not require any new IT infrastructure to run plan management or consumer assistance activities. As for the state-based exchange, there are no GRF monies spent on a state-based exchange. The state-based exchange must be self-sustaining, meaning that once the exchange is up and running, the assessments must pay for all full operations for the exchange.
So the industry is going to be assessed to pay for the operation of the state bait exchange.
In the full federal, in the partnership exchange, the federal government intends, we are guessing at this point, we don't have a final rule, but it appears that the federal government is going to assess just the carriers that are playing on the exchange. In a state-based exchange, it will depend on the legislation and how the state-based exchange is ultimately financed.
Your belief, though, is that regardless of which of the three options we end up with, the participants of the exchange will be assessed on a pro rata basis to fund the operation of the exchange, whether the federal government does it or the state government does it?
It will depend on the model, but in a federal exchange, a full federal,
yeah,
or the partnership, it appears that the federal government is going to assess just the carriers that are selling on the exchange. As for the state-based exchange, it will be determined by the legislation and whether or not it's a larger assessment or a participant assessment.
Besides the cost of the exchange, are there differentials in the cost to the people of Illinois determining which way we go?
In terms of which operating model we ultimately have? No. Again, because the state-based exchange must be self-sustaining, there will be no GRF monies.
But I'm talking about
an exchange.
Subsidies or other costs associated with the implementation of this.
You mean from a consumer perspective, will there be a difference in the subsidies that they receive if they participate on the exchange?
No, will there be another cost to the taxpayers of Illinois to facilitate this?
It would be the same regardless of the model.
And have we put any numbers together on out-year costs?
I believe that the Congress has, but I don't know if we have.
Right. We have not done a study of the, I'm not sure exactly what costs you seem to have some costs in mind. I'm not sure that.
General impact of the ACA, you mean,
yeah,
in Illinois?
Yeah, well, there has been a lot of national research on that. It's very hard to know what would happen in a specific state.
But have we taken the national research and tried to play it down to what it's going to mean to the people of Illinois?
We have in a very general way. In terms of the specifics, there are a lot of assumptions built into this. One of the big assumptions is the end of cost shifting that institutions undertake now. When an uninsured patient seeks care in an emergency room, the hospital costs are involved in covering those costs. If those costs go away, because that person will now have insurance, that would lower the costs to the insurance.
Could you share with CAGFA what you have so that maybe they could take a look at what we're looking at as a price tag in out years?
Right. I mean, overall, it is intended to, and the Congressional Budget Office that scored the ACA in the first place identifies a lot of out-year savings from a lower cost pressures on the healthcare system in general. But we'd be happy to share that. Yes.
Your second dot point is a new term to me on page two, or your first dot point. You say establish a state-based exchange as a quasi-government entity with the potential for active purchaser role. Can you define that active purchaser role?
Well, the active purchaser was a term used more of a year or so ago. What it means is that the exchange, given the potential buying power of the with an exchange structure, that the exchange itself could help play a role in reducing the premiums of policies sold for policies sold on the exchange. So the exchange could be a simple lister of all of the policies that insurance companies want to offer through the exchange and provide a apples-to-apples kind of comparison for the consumer. Or it could play that role plus a more active role in saying, well, Expedia example, you know, you can find airfares from Chicago to Los Angeles that are $500, some are $250, some are $300, $400, $500, and then you see some that are $1,500. Well, does the exchange, in an active purchaser role, the exchange might decide it doesn't want to, it wants to encourage insurance companies to keep their premiums under $500, or their fares under $500 in this metaphor, and that we wouldn't be listing policies that are whose fares are excessive, considered more than necessary
and
to provide the care.
Why?
That's the model. The model, the why, is that we're very interested in lowering the costs of insurance for the state's consumers. That is one of the big cost items for families, and it continues to increase.
How does it lower costs?
Well, if it encourages consumers if it encourages insurers to list policies that are more affordable and encourages consumers to purchase those policies.
How does it do that?
By...
They can still they can buy them if they're outside the exchange or inside the exchange. We essentially, under this law, have turned insurance companies into utilities. If they make too much money, they've got to give it back. So I just don't understand the rationale.
Well, the only model for this that's worked is in Massachusetts, and it's been up for 4 years, and they have played a more active role in listing policies on the exchange that meet certain criteria other than the essential health benefits. And the experience in Massachusetts is that insurers have competed by offering more benefits for a limited premium amount as opposed to seeing insurance premiums continue to increase. Now, it's only been a couple of years. It's hard to draw too many
conclusions. A lot's changed since Massachusetts. I mean, since Massachusetts, we've turned the health insurance industry into a utility. I mean,
well,
to me, it seems to me like you're pushing away free choice and market-driven pricing and trying to create something that...
It's utilizing the... from a free enterprise system, it's utilizing the purchasing power of the...
Not really, because you don't have to buy it through the exchange, under the way I understand it.
No, but the more advantageous policies are on the exchange, the more interest there'll be in purchasing insurance through the exchange.
You can do that by price on the exchange without limiting exposure. I mean, first of all, and you're also going to have navigators who are going to... If they're doing their job right, are going to express to them policies
right
on and off the exchange, right?
Yes, and I don't want to argue that the active purchaser is the only approach to do this. I was just reporting that in our research going around the state, hearing from providers, insurers, and small businesses and large businesses, and that there was the recommendation, that we came up with the recommendation that the exchange board, based on experience after at some point in time, might decide that they could play a role in reducing costs of insurance even further, and we wanted them to have that option.
Thank you.
Further questions, Representative Singer, and then Staines and Nolan.
A couple things real quick, thank you. What we have just completed last spring on Medicaid reform and what we're doing here with the exchange, I mean, looking at eligibility and the rest, and also looking at some of the points here with care coordination efforts, which sound very similar to what we're also doing on the Medicaid reform side. Could you help me understand? Maybe you don't have to answer this because I think it's complicated, but it would be very helpful for me to maybe put something together saying here's what we're doing on the Medicaid side, here's what will be happening on the exchange side, so I can get a better sense on, you know, who's going to move where, or do we need to tweak our Medicaid reform effort now or whatever, because I'm confused in regards particularly with your delivery system reforms, what those are, and... Is that a normal part of the exchange from the federal level? I'm very confused on what you're doing here.
Let me clarify a couple of things based on your question, and we can still get that type of chart that you're asking for at a later date. The delivery system reforms that we're instituting now apply to the Medicaid-covered population. As Illinois is acting as a prudent purchaser of services, we we've learned and decided that our fee-for-service system has not purchased high enough quality of care for the dollars that we're spending, and we think we can do better through different models, the integrated care model being one of them, where the providers are working in coordinated delivery systems. So we're instituting that exclusively for the Medicaid population. But we recognize that because we have a large share of that market, that the reforms that providers are undertaking to satisfy the Medicaid requirements will also have an impact for their ability to provide care to privately insured individuals. So there's a spin-off effect from the effort towards establishing integrated delivery systems that will apply to the private sector, but we're only purchasing care in that coordinated way within our within the Medicaid program.
And I guess where I'm trying to get my hands around, too, is the dollars that are being spent to implement this. I mean, we're not mixing the $32 million exchange dollars with these dollars whatsoever.
Correct.
Okay.
The $32 million is money going to build an infrastructure
okay.
for the exchange and the research.
I guess, you know, it would be to present this in my, you know, it'd be a cleaner way to present it if we just presented it from the exchange, the $32 million. And I know these other pieces are there and being worked on. I look at this more of an implementation chart than anything else, but to talk through the dollars is getting very confusing. And I know one of the concerns we had before, too, and I'm thinking this through, too, Medicaid, I mean, we're doing a lot to, we had to do a major reform effort here. So we changed a lot of things, and now we're going to be putting people back on the rolls again, which is going to cost us money down the road, I mean, with this exchange here. And I know there was the other concern about, will people game the system on and off and the rest. So I'm trying to get a sense for how the two are going to work together, but I need them separate at the same time. So that would be helpful. This made this presentation confusing because even though the two are meshing together, I totally understand having it. We're asking questions for the exchange piece more than we are from this other part of the Medicaid reform process that's going to be ongoing. The last question I have, you said you submitted a blueprint on November 16th. Do we have a copy, or can we get a copy of that?
We're waiting to see what it's a exchange to the information to the Secretary of HHS, and they're reviewing it. It's a draft. They're going to be asking for some changes to it. So we're waiting to see what the federal government will want us to release publicly of this. We would like to get as much of this public as possible, and we're trying to work with our federal project officers to find out what's permissible. But it's a very technical description of what happens within the Department of Insurance, how they handle their plan management functions. There's no reason for you not to see it. It's just a question of getting the right permission, and we'll be happy to provide that.
So you need permission from the federal government in order to have us see what you're asking for the federal government?
It's more that the federal government intends to make portions of it public after they've approved it, and we need to ensure that whatever sections they want us to make, they want it to be up on the web. So we just need to get confirmation from them which sections they'd like us to put up on the web.
And I guess, you know, I would think that at least this body here wouldn't necessarily be public per se. I mean, we shouldn't be, even though it's technical, I would think we wouldn't be prohibited from seeing what you're asking for.
I understand and appreciate your question, and I would like to be able to share it as broadly as we can. We're just waiting for the lawyers to take a look at what our requirements are, and we can get copies to whoever our lawyers. I'm very familiar with that promise. One of several. Yes, I hear you, and we can maybe we're trying to get some information over the holiday weekend, and we're trying to get that as soon as possible.
Further questions, Senator Steens.
Morning. So one, I want to make sure I really do understand the ongoing operating cost differential between doing it federally versus the state exchange. It sounded like what you were saying was with the federal exchange, there were the intent from the federal government, your understanding is that they're going to assess the insurance companies who have plans on the exchange.
Okay.
Now, under the state-federal partnership, we're going to have state plans, Illinois state plans that are on that exchange, correct?
That's right.
So they will be getting assessed to be on the federal plan.
That's right, correct? By the federal government.
By the federal government. Yeah. So that assessment is that how much that will cost, what they'll be assessed, change based on whether we continue it on as a federal level versus if we do it the state. I just want to understand how much more cost is there on an ongoing operational basis if we do take this on at the state level or not.
There is a potential that that would change if we were a state-based exchange depending on the financing piece of the bill.
But there wouldn't be duplicative. So
no.
If we do it state, we'll figure it out. We'll have the assessments here, and then they won't be assessed at the federal. It's not like any of the insurance plans are going to double hit,
no.
Right? Okay,
that's
so
right.
Generally speaking, it depends on what we do, but we can sort of control how we do the cost compared to the federal government based on how we structure this legislatively. And ultimately, if we do this, the government structure for this ongoing quasi-governmental entity will have those decisions.
That's correct.
In partnership with the government. What is the, because it sounds like then the one piece really is the one-time, putting it in place and constructing the exchange cost. We haven't spent that $32 million yet. When do we need to start spending that to be able to be up in time to have the state-operated exchange? And if the intent is doing that in 2015, what's our decision timeline here that we need to know so we don't go down that path if, in fact, we're not going to pass legislation and do it this way? When do we need to make the call and legislatively get something passed to not waste those dollars?
So the partnership exchange begins in October of 2013 to go live in 2014. In order for us to meet the exact same deadline that we had this year, the November 16th, 2012 blueprint submission deadline, that deadline is going to be exactly the same next year, meaning mid-November 2013. In order for us to meet the November 2013 deadline to declare our intent to be a state-based exchange, legislation must be passed before the end of the session, meaning May of 2013.
Okay, so you don't think it's something that needs to be done more rapidly than that, but do we have to let the RFP before that?
The sooner the better, because we obviously have the RFP out the door, and the vendor that will be coming on board will need more than 12 months to build. This obviously has implications as well with our friends at HFS and the IES system that they're building. And they have a vendor on board already in our building. And the idea is that our system and the IES system must be able to talk to one another. And so the sooner we can get our vendor on board, the better.
And this Healthcare Reform Implementation Council, first, can you remind me who was on that council? And then I know that there was a lot of input sought, and I want to then get to a question around the nature of the input and how much collaboration and agreement there was. Who was actually on that council?
The council is comprised of the cabinet offices that relate in some fashion to health insurance. So we have Department of Healthcare Family Services, Department of Human Services, Department on Aging, Department of Public Health, the Central Management Services because of its role in purchasing large amounts of health coverage, the Health Information Exchange or the Governor's Office of Health Information Technology, and I don't know if I'm leaving anybody out,
But there was a lot of input sought, I know, from businesses, from consumer groups, from insurance groups, I know a lot of legislators here have really taken a lot of leadership and spent a lot of time on this too. My recollection had been that there had been a lot of agreement that we wanted to have a state-run exchange. Is that the case, or were there really outlying beliefs otherwise?
That's an important observation because I think it was the initial recommendation, the consensus, if you will, from sometimes opposing camps, the insurers, the advocates, and the businesses, both large and small, that Illinois should be having its own exchange rather than a federal exchange, is what drove the recommendation to establish the quasi-governmental state-based exchange, as was noted earlier in one of your questions. And that's what has driven our solicitation of federal grant funds to help build that exchange. So we've been acting, I think, in good faith towards the development of a state-based exchange, responding to the reflective of the will, I think, of a broad array of stakeholders.
And I assume they were also taking a look at the differential, if any, on the cost structure on an ongoing operating basis of a state one versus a federal one. And taking that into account, the conclusion was that we probably still wanted to go forward with the with a
There was a sense from each of the groups that we would have more control, that there would be more coordination issues by the state having its own operating its own exchange than having to hope for the best with a federal exchange. So that was the basis for it. We haven't rejected that notion at all. But without the authorizing state legislation, we've gotten ourselves closer to a bind, and I think we're very close to that now because, you know, the idea of spending good money towards the development of an exchange without the legislation authorizing it is a challenging position for us all to be in, and I say all of us because it's going to require the General Assembly to pass the legislation to work with the governor and make sure it's legislation that reflects his priorities. So that we can then move ahead towards that goal of a state-based exchange. I mean, if not, you know, the residents of Illinois will have an exchange on October 1st, 2013, and that will from which they will get their health insurance selections for policies sold on the exchange, you know, with or without us moving in the direction of a state exchange.
All right, thanks.
Further questions? Senator Noland.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As is often the case, and happily so, a colleague of mine has already asked the questions that I sought, namely Senator Staines. The timeline. The one thing I don't say, I visited your website, and you, for the most part, you responded the question that I might have had, but do we find it on your website? Do we find that timeline
a
here?
Timeline?
Yeah.
Is there a timeline? I think we have. Yeah. The critical dates really for us are October 2013 is open enrollment.
Well, that's okay. You're telling me that, but I'd like to see it.
It's probably
I'm a visual person.
Somewhere.
I'm not a visual person.
I don't think it's a graphic timeline. I think there's a document with a series of dates
that's
on
right.
it that we prepared for the last an earlier council meeting, so we can make sure that's highlighted or get you a copy of it.
Very good. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Further questions? Representative Harris.
So we've heard the state's deadlines and timetables, and I see out in the audience a herd of insurance representatives. And it seems to me that as we were in some of our previous meetings for the insurance industry, you folks needed 12, 14, 16, 18 months head start, lead time to develop your systems for this. Is there anyone from the insurance industry who would be able to say, how much time, as we look at, you know, when we need to pass this for our convenience, you know, how much do we need, time do we need to consider and give the industry to be able to prepare if it's a state exchange versus a federal or a partnership? Cricket.
No volunteers. We will find that out for you.
If you have some thoughts on it individually for your companies, if you could let us know, because I think we need to be cognizant of whatever deadlines you folks might face.
Companies are talking to the Department of Insurance about the plans they're working on because they have to be submitted in time for the review function of the Department of Insurance under the partnership by March? Soon.
Soon. Very soon.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, in any business, the more certainty you're working within, the better job you can do for your shareholders or your consumers. And right now, we've not had a lot of certainty.
Okay. I have a few questions, and most of them have been covered. I appreciate you showing us where you're at currently. When do we expect to know from the federal government what provisions of your blueprints, which you submitted, can be made public?
The delay was that they have given states more time to submit their applications.
I think middle of December, I believe.
We decided that we would submit as planned on the 16th. Our blueprint was ready, and we wanted to get it in, so we expect to hear from them shortly about which sections, because they see it as a living document, meaning there are a lot of portions of the application, as Michael
mentioned that are very technical about what the Department of Insurance plans to do. And a lot of the sections of the blueprint are contingent on what our vendor will be providing for us. And so the federal government is interested in, once that vendor is on board and we have a contract secured, learning more about exactly what they are planning to offer, given that we had five bids and therefore five separate proposals. So I expect that once we have more information from them on that, they'll be ready to approve us, and we'd be able to make the entire document public.
Senator Hayne had brought up a question that I wasn't sure of the answer. Hopefully you will know. As far as the assessment, when the federal government comes in, sets the federal exchange, they will assess all companies operating within the exchange.
That's right.
Does that assessment count towards the, or is that usable in configuration of minimum loss ratios for those companies?
In terms of making the MLR calculation, no.
Okay. As far as what we have, the exchanges, would they be, are you envisioning a multi-state partnership run by the federal government? I'm trying to get actually a picture of what the exchange will look like. If a person who normally would need to purchase health insurance decides to go to the exchange, what do they see?
So I believe your question is about whether or not there will be plans offered, multi-state plans that will be offered, and they are required to be offered on the exchange. Mm-hmm. The final rule about multi-state plans has not been released by the federal government. We expect that very soon. And so how that actually is going to work, and from a DOI regulation perspective, and whether or not Illinois will have control over regulating a multi-state plan is to be determined. Whether or not we've had somewhat, though the information that we've had from OPM has been somewhat lacking in terms of multi-state plans, but when the federal rule comes out, which we expect very soon, we'll have a little bit more information about exactly how the state of Illinois will have control over those multi-state plans.
I was curious because we have different sets of mandates under our Blue Cross Advantage plan, plus the other two additional items would be different than what some of the surrounding or other partnering states would possibly be offering.
We are looking forward to having that.
Right.
Okay.
But I think it's fair to say that, I mean, in terms of what the consumer will see the multi-state plan options as well as the plans that are going to be developed for Illinois by state and national insurers.
I envision on the state-federal partnership. Have we had the opportunity yet, since we have our basic specs for what should be in each of the plans, what a plan would cost an individual? What should be the, who would be going in and applying to it in here in Illinois? Have we priced one out yet? I would say the bronze package, which I'd say is probably going to be the main market play within any exchange that's set up.
Well,
do we know what that would be?
The carriers are required to offer a silver plan as well. So, but is your question about from a consumer perspective when they are looking at
it's
the
about affordability. How much is going to cost? I mean, if someone goes to the site who currently is uninsured and now under the federal law and the law of the land must be insured, if he goes and buys a Blue Cross Blue Shield Advantage plan right now, it's about $300 to $350 a month for an individual. I mean, that type of number is what I'm looking at. What's the individual who now is going to be required to buy? Do we have any ideas on that yet?
We do not know, although the federal government has just released the AV calculator, meaning the carriers are now able to go on and calculate the actuarial value for that bronze plan.
Right. So this is what the insurers are busy working on is what is it going to cost them to cover the 10 essential health benefits in the manner in which at least the extent actuarially of the Blue Advantage plan, and they've got they and then they can do more, charge more, but they can't do any less.
Understood. I'm sure that all the members would be interested in that. Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have about four questions. Bear with me. The first question, just for clarification, the open enrollment, which is projected for October 2013, does that mean that the integrated eligibility system will be up and working?
That's the idea, yes. They will. They are working towards that October 2013 deadline.
But, yes, it's not required by the grant to do that, but we are trying very hard to make it a seamless system for our consumers. There's a lot of work and a lot of antiquated machinery at the Department of Health Care Family Services and Department of Human Services that we need to be that we're working on now to make sure we can do that.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification. The Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois Blue Advantage, why could you bring about some clarification of why we chose them?
So the federal government gave us the option of choosing from the three largest small group by enrollment, the three state plans, or the three fed plans. We were looking largely at the small group market because they are required to cover our state mandates. From a pricing perspective, the Blue Cross Blue Shield Blue Advantage plan was not the leanest plan. The leanest plan, however, had caused the council some very serious concerns because of the number of service limits that were in that plan. And although benefit administration doesn't factor into how a plan is actually sold, there was a tremendous amount of concern about those service limits affecting the actuarial value level. And so the Blue Cross Blue Shield plan, the Blue Advantage plan, had offered a better balance of benefit limits, but also richness of coverage. Some of the things that the council looked at specifically were mental health services. And that leanest plan that I mentioned, there were a terrific amount of service limits around mental health coverage, and that had caused some great concerns. And the other was habilitative services. And that Blue Cross Blue Shield Blue Advantage plan had a better balance of the service limits, but also the richness and coverage.
Okay. Thank you for expounding. I appreciate that. Can you say a little bit more about the funding for the workforce development training and prevention piece, and is that just a statewide issue or a city issue? How does that work?
On the workforce side, there have been grants made to the state, to some of the state's hospital and residency programs to encourage more, to fund more primary care residency slots. And that was the purpose for those grants. We have still to finish, and we need to work more vigorously, I think, throughout many of our state government agencies to better align practice acts, medical practice act, nursing practice act, certificate criteria for CNAs, to make sure that we're really getting the most out of the training and qualifications of the individuals currently working in healthcare. And the council did identify challenges in those areas that we will need to work with the General Assembly over the next few months to help us clarify, correct, and maybe modernize some of those practice acts that would also help us in our workforce, making sure our workforce is working efficiently, which not, in some cases now we're missing some opportunities that we'd like to make sure that providers have are allowed to do legally.
And so you are working broadly and locally with city training.
We have
institutions.
The providers, of course, you know, submit their own grant requests and operate their own residency training programs, and we've been monitoring those. But we are trying to figure out how we could better coordinate efforts with them, and any help you or other members of the General Assembly can, you know, might want to provide, I'm very, very happy to engage you in that effort.
Okay. Okay. And my last question, and it may be a strange question, but could the designation of a partnership exchange versus a state exchange be perceived as if some Illinoisans will not be covered under the Affordable Health Care Act?
No, the exchange...
I'm just concerned.
Regardless of exchange operating model,
okay,
the people of Illinois will have a health insurance exchange October of 2013.
And all Illinoisans will be able to tap into those programs and have their health care needs met.
That's right. It's just that behind the scenes, the federal government will be running it instead of the state of Illinois.
Okay.
There is the Medicaid eligibility concern, but that's unrelated to the exchange. We still need to authorize the inclusion of those individuals. I talked about people, single adults generally, with incomes under 133% of poverty. That eligibility group needs to be legislated in to the Medicaid program coverage by the General Assembly.
And I bring that question because that eligibility is important, and most Illinoisans are believing the ACA is going to help them get their health care coverage regardless of their eligibility of Medicaid. So what type of communications are we going to disseminate to the people about that?
Well, the first thing we need is the legislation passed by the General Assembly so that we cover that group officially and formally, legally.
Perfect.
And then we can start our outreach effort. He talked about engaging in a multicultural effort. It's in our interest to get everybody who can be covered through the exchange premium subsidies mm-hmm. to be covered that way, so that we are using federal money as much as possible. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of people out there, as I'm sure you're aware, who still don't understand this, and they've only been hearing bad things about it, and they need to hear some good things and understand how it can help them and what their route is into the mainstream of health insurance coverage.
Okay. Thank you so much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
A follow-up question from Co-Chairman Osmond, and then Representative Gable will have our last questions before we head off the session.
Thank you. I guess I'm a little confused. You're anticipating that the companies will have their program in place to you for review in March.
That's right.
But yet, when we didn't get any input from the audience, it was our estimate that they would take anywhere from 6 months to a year to 18 months to formulate their plan. What is the governor's plan if companies do not come forth?
Our plan is to be ready when they do come forth, and all of our conversations, informal ones primarily, have been that they are working on developing plans. There are up to 1 million people who may be buying their insurance, looking at the exchange for their insurance. It's kind of hard to think that very many insurance companies would want to forego that opportunity to reach a fairly large market segment.
And the Department of Insurance has issued a survey of our companies in Illinois that issue major medical, and we expect that there will be several hundred plans sold on the exchange in the first year.
But yet the time element may be very strict.
It is strict. Strict.
And especially when the regulations that you give out to them are in flux all the time.
We are still awaiting several federal final rules from the federal government, but we are hopeful that they will be out soon. We've received 3 very important ones even just last week.
And the premium calculator, the actuarial value calculator, is a big, big part of that, and now they can really get to work figuring out how to price their policies.
Thank you.
We have... Representative Gable has a question. Before that, I wanted to just get some clarification on the rules that we're expecting. How will the rules impact non-exchange characters, companies who are not operating and don't choose to operate within the exchange? Will there be any impacts there?
there will be rules that affect plans sold off the exchange. For example, the essential health benefits affect plans that are sold off of the exchange as well. So there are rules that are market-wide.
Can you explain that a little bit more?
Well, so as an example, the essential health benefit rule, plans that are sold both on and off the exchange in the individual and small group markets must meet the essential health benefit guidelines. And so the final rule will affect plans that are sold both in and outside of the exchange. We are expecting a final rule on that at the end of December.
For a final question, Representative Gable.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I just wanted to emphasize or re-understand the advantages of having a state exchange versus a federal exchange. So one of the advantages that I understand is that we could have our own financing mechanism, which could make it cost less money for the members of our state. Are there other advantages that you see to having a state-based exchange as opposed to a federal exchange? I mean, I think it gives us more opportunities to have a model that's more designed for our state, meet some of our individual state needs.
That's right. We have more control. And I think this is especially obvious in terms of consumer assistance. Now, in the partnership model, the state of Illinois will be able to run an in-person consumer assistance program, but we will not be able to have any input on the consumer assistance functions from a more global perspective, meaning marketing, outreach, navigators. The federal government has indicated their willingness to allow us to provide input in those areas, but really it's going to be run by the federal government. And so I think especially from the consumer assistance perspective, if we were to have a state-based exchange, it means that the state of Illinois can design something specific to Illinois and to the Illinois consumer and for the Illinois marketplace.
Okay. So for consumer accessibility and possible
That's
cost.
Right.
I also just want to emphasize the importance of moving on this quickly, because my understanding is that we already have a vendor working on our integrated eligibility system,
right,
which is not only going to look at eligibility for premium subsidies or Medicaid, it's also reorganizing our TANF and SNAP programs.
That's right.
So it's really reorganizing our entire eligibility system for all of our programs in Illinois. And that has to somehow integrate and match with our exchange as well.
That's right.
So I think it's important that we are able to, now that we are soliciting a vendor to actually issue the grant to them, to be able to do that in a timely manner so we can make sure that the two programs are integrated in terms of computer technology.
Mm-hmm. Right. No, absolutely. And I would add the Navigator program to the list of things for which we would have control under a state exchange, and that is, I think, very important to many of us who are concerned about making sure that the information and assistance is culturally sensitive and able to get to the pockets of the population who would otherwise not understand how to utilize the exchange. So that's an important advantage, I think, as well.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for all the work you've done on this issue.
Thank you.
Representative Davis has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I thank you very much for being here, both of you. I have one question. Have you started, or when will you start, the recruitment or training for the negotiators?
The navigators.
I'm sorry.
Under the state-federal partnership, the federal government will control the navigator program.
The entire program?
The entire navigator program. That's one of the requirements that the whoever operates the exchange operates the navigators, because you want your navigators to be consistent with the information and the structure and the function of the exchange. But that will be a federal function for at least 2014, calendar year 2014.
That's right.
Okay. We will, of course, get information on their recruitment process. Of course, my concern and a lot of our concern is that there will be some African-American navigators, and you know, they'll have the training and so forth that's needed, and be able to meet the criteria that's established.
Yeah, we'll provide whatever input we're permitted by the federal department operating the Navigator program. But, yeah, we feel very strongly, obviously, and I hope the federal government shares that as well, but it's something that we don't have any direct control over as a federal exchange.
Okay, thank you very much.
Seeing no further questions, I'd entertain the motion to adjourn. Representative Osmond, and with that, all in favor, yes.
Yeah.
The committee stands adjourned.
Thank you very much, Mr.
Thank you,
Chairman,
Mr. Gelder,
co-chairs, and members
Kelly.
Of the committee.
Thank you.